Support for the Source Podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico Studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. It's almost become a standard plot line in the TV rom-com sitcom. If the show is on the air long enough, the central couple eventually has a baby. Think about Friends, Big Bang Theory, Mad About You, How I Met Your Mother. It's not controversial anymore. That wasn't always the case. But how these pregnancies are depicted, it tells us a lot about what are the apparent norms and societal expectations that don't actually trace the path of real life. In the book, It's All in the Delivery, Pregnancy in American Film and Television Comedy, we learn about the evolution of depicting pregnancy for laughs on the screen, and we're joined by the author, Victoria Stewart-Tevent. And Victoria, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much, David. It's great to be here.
I got to compliment you on the title of the book. It's the perfect title. Is there a story behind how you came up with the title?
No, I've been working on the book since 2017, more or less, and it took all that time to come up with the title. It was an absolutely last minute lightning bolt of inspiration. I was using the title Fertile Ground, Pregnancy in American Comedy, for a long time. And I knew I didn't love that, but I didn't know what to replace it with. And I sent a lot of kind of punny options to the press, and they hated all of them.
It just shows you what happens. You keep trying, and eventually
and you
magic
just keep
comes.
Trying. I know. You just keep pitching. So I really didn't know if they would love It's All in the Delivery. So I was thrilled when I sent that as a kind of last-ditch effort to come up with something new. And everybody liked it, and I love it. So I'm so delighted every time I see it on the shelf.
So how do you tell someone what your book is about?
I tend to think of it in really historic terms, that it's about representations of pregnancy in comedy from the silent era to the present. And I think the film really, or the book really does think in terms of the progression of ideas and how each generation has altered them, given the changes in how real pregnancy is experienced medically and socially. And also the sort of increasing candor of how conversations about pregnancy in public can proceed in different social eras. With an emphasis, it's really important to me in the book that pregnancy doesn't just mean, you know, late stage baby bump pregnancy, the way that it's sort of often simplified, that it's also thinking through a range of pregnancy experiences, including infertility and trying to conceive and abortion and miscarriage and the kind of early first trimester phase that's not really visible yet, and all of the ways that all of that is pregnancy too. And in fact, the ways that those other experiences tend not to be as represented in popular media, especially comedy, is part of how, like, the emphasis on women in pregnancy and women's experiences has always been kind of the most taboo part. And so coming at it from the perspective of taking seriously the range of women's experiences around pregnancy within the space of comedy, where seriousness is kind of part of it, but not all of it.
Right. So
that was a really long description.
No, but it's great. It's great. So the thing is, though, I mean, why was it so confined all with production code and these censors, and they had all these rules about what you could and couldn't portray on the screen, particularly, I mean, when, you know, people have babies, you know, and they know these things. What were they trying to protect us from?
I know it's so hard to even wrap your brain around from a modern perspective, because obviously pregnant women have always existed. And so the idea that children had to be protected from, like, seeing a bump seems deranged. And yet that,
I mean, especially
was
when this is in the baby logic boom, and you just look down, yeah, the block and you see a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of families happening around you.
Yeah. And films managed to banish the word pregnant and the appearance of a bump on screen kind of all the way through, almost all the way through the 50s. And then when television came along, and as you say, the baby boom, and especially I Love Lucy, created a situation where Lucille Ball was such a big star, and the show was such a hit, and her pregnancy was, going to interrupt the season. I mean, there was no way to get around it. And the producers at first actually talked about canceling the series because the taboo was so strong that it was inconceivable to just show her pregnant on TV every week.
Yeah, so I'm going to play a clip here, and let me set this up. This is from the classic program, I Love Lucy, and this is when Lucy reveals to her husband, Ricky Ricardo, that they are going to have a baby. And it's at the club. Lucy, come down to the club and bring my white suit type of comedy. Let's give a listen.
Oh, isn't this wonderful? Listen to this. Dear Mr. Ricardo, my husband and I are going to have a blessed event. I just found out about it today, and I haven't told him yet. I heard you sing a number called We're Having a Baby, My Baby and Me. If you will sing it for us now, it will be my way of breaking the news to him. Isn't that wonderful? Of course, I'll do it for you. Sure. Oh, wait a minute. I got a wonderful idea. Why don't we bring the couple up here and I'll sing it right to them, eh? Come on, let's bring them up on the floor. Come on, folks. Come on, we just want to wish you luck. Who is it? Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop. No? When the wind blows, the cradle will rock. No? When the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. And down will come, baby, cradle and all. Rock-a-bye, baby, on the, hiya, honey, on the treetop. When the wind blows, the cradle will fall. When the bow breaks, the cradle will fall. Honey, no.
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Why didn't you tell me?
Why, you didn't give me a chance.
Are you kidding?
No.
It's me!
It still holds up. It's still great comedy.
I think it's such a delightful moment. And you can hear they're both actually close to tears. It was reflecting their real life struggle to have children.
And but they still, you notice that they have to be very cautious in the word choices. He says, "We're having a blessed event," which was,
Yes.
Code for, Lucy's pregnant.
Yeah, the word pregnant took a long time to come along.
I'm taking a break here, so we're going to come back and we'll deconstruct what happened with that and with America and how that changed things. Particularly, it reflects upon ourselves, and we learn the seriousness from the comedy about pregnancy. And our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Do you have any favorite TV, film, comedies that depict pregnancy that informed you, shaped your attitudes, that you thought were outrageous or were just like ridiculous? Let's have a conversation. Give us a call, 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this.
The City of San Antonio Revitalize SA Corridor Leadership Program offers no-cost training for those interested in neighborhood commercial corridor revitalization. Over 9 months, participants will obtain leadership and strategy skills and have an opportunity for grant funding. Applications at sanantonio.gov/edd/revitalizeSA. This nonprofit message is underwritten by the Economic Development Department.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, and we're talking about the book It's all in the delivery about the history of comedy, showing pregnancy and other aspects of fertility, growing your family, adoption, infertility, abortion, these issues, how they've been portrayed on the screen for laughs, but there's seriousness in the laughs. And we're joined by the author, Victoria Sturdivant. And so tell me more about why was the, beyond the fact that this was a groundbreaking event, it kind of set the standard for how pregnancy stories were going to be laid out in TV comedy thereafter, because it seemed like a lot of the laughs were kind of driven by Ricky's reaction to Lucy's pregnancies. He was showing his disgust to her cravings, you know, pickles and ice cream, her erratic emotional behavior, him having sympathy pains. These were all became standard tropes in comedy, therefore.
Yeah, and I think that stuff especially reaches back older than Lucy. During the years that films couldn't show pregnancy directly, one of the strategies that they used was to show the father. And so you'd see fathers handing out cigars and fathers pacing outside the delivery room and fathers kind of being all panicked or rushing their partners to the delivery room. And so for like a generation, all of the cliches around pregnancy were actually about men and not about the pregnant women themselves. And I think that sort of encapsulates a lot of the discomfort around pregnancy that we're still trying to get over and get past. That one, it's evidence of sexuality. And so, you know, the ways that film and television treated it as obscene for so long, you know, can't really be divorced from the way that it's a physical manifestation of a sexual act, but also just a general discomfort with the ways that pregnancy is just a little bit unruly. It's a little bit uncanny. The body is, you know, sort of two persons in one space, that it's no longer a sort of simple individual figure the way that sort of the body has been classically understood, and the treatment of that as a little bit icky has really lingered as well. So I think I Love Lucy is great for the ways that Ricky does enact all of those tropes of the comic father who's bumbling around trying to make sense of what's happening to his wife. But I also think that it's very dear for the ways that, you know, Ricky sees her eating some snack, it's pickles and ice cream and shrimp or something.
Sardines
she puts on there. And he gets sort of jealous you know, they go through the whole episode that way. But at the end, he says, oh, can I have a taste of that? And he sort of wants it too. And it's about sharing, you know, it's about this kind of companionate marriage that they have. And they're both so clearly excited, the characters and also the performers.
But let me ask another point here. The thing is, with I Love Lucy in these episodes, there was some reality bending going on simultaneously. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, the two couple stars, Ricky and Lucy, they're married in real life and they're having a baby at the same time. There was some confusion about, you know, Desi Arnaz Jr. and little Ricky, you know. Yeah. I think in a way also, and I think TV watchers eat this stuff up, is when you break through the fourth wall and you bleed into reality.
Yeah.
So that was part of it too.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go to a caller that we have here. And our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And let's go to Claiborne. Claiborne, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I'm Gen X. I was raised by women. I spent most of my time with women from every socioeconomic and academic and professional spectrum. When I was 11 in junior high school, I read the first edition of Our Body, Ourselves, cover to cover. So all of this makes complete sense to me. And the basis of this show has never made sense to me. And it's kind of sad that I know more about the female body and how it works than a lot of the women on this planet.
All right. Well, Claiborne, thank you for that comment. Appreciate that. Do you want to react to that, Victoria?
Yeah. Well, I don't. It wasn't.
I mean, if it's true, it's in the minority.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And I think that at one point, there was sort of water cooler media that everyone was consuming together. And you could sort of point to an increase in candor around sort of the facts of life on a timeline leading up into like the 90s. And now media is so fragmented that if you want kind of a really explicit understanding of pregnancy as a biological condition, there's reality shows and prestige television that'll get into a lot of details that would have been taboo in earlier generations. But you have to find them. I mean, there's no longer this kind of straightforward mainstream set of texts that everybody is exposed to, where that knowledge kind of disseminates generally at once. So I feel like it kind of stopped, knowledge of pregnancy sort of stopped with like Father of the Bride Part 2 or 9 months in the 90s, where pregnancy was still very much represented through the father's perspective and often as a set of kind of hysterical practices, that the pregnant woman became this kind of exotic pet who had to be taken care of in complicated ways that stressed out the father to be.
So I'm going to play another clip. I think it kind of makes the point. Yeah. And this is from the film Knocked Up, which is a 2007 film, Judd Apatow film. And this is the pregnancy scene. There's a lot of screaming going on here. And it's just kind of just shows, I think it was kind of, this is when they kind of get into kind of a gross out comedy part of the movie. There's a lot of screaming, and it kind of shows that divide between a gender divide about what to tolerate in these scenes. Let's give a listen.
It really hurts.
See, we're well on our way.
Okay, I want the epidural. Okay, give me the epidural.
Give her the epidural. Okay, give it to her now.
Okay, Allison, we pass the point of an epidural. Okay, the cervix is fully dilated.
No, seriously, I want an epidural. I know there's time.
We can't give you the epidural.
Take the time. I'll make sure it doesn't come out.
We have time. Just do it, please.
I'm sorry, we have no time. We're gonna just have to do this the all-natural way, okay? The way you wanted to do it, okay? Ready?
Okay.
Here comes another contraction, okay? I want you to push. Okay, ready?
Good. I feel everything! Oh my God, it's happening!
Okay, maybe we can take it down just a little. I think you're gonna scare the other pregnant
one. Kidding me?
Okay.
Are you kidding me?
Okay, it's crowding. I'm seeing the head.
Oh, God. What does it look like?
You don't want to see it. You
no, want I want to see
it's
it.
Beautiful. You don't want to, though.
No, I want to see it. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Okay, we're almost home. One, two.
Get
out.
Oh, no.
Push. One, two, three. You pass the shoulders. One more big push. Good.
So why is that funny? Where are the laughs coming from?
Well, it's, as you said, it's in the tradition of gross out comedy. And what I think is interesting about Knocked Up is that, again, it's a great example of how so much pregnancy comedy is narrated through a masculine perspective, right? The jokes are almost all in the whole movie coming from the Seth Rogen character and all of his nutty friends. And the pregnant woman is in many ways the least gross thing in the movie. You know, she's attractive and appealing throughout. And occasionally there's a reference to something gynecological, but it's like the film can't quite find a way to think through the pregnancy as being fully part of the gross out comedy until this scene, until crowning, and then crowning becomes kind of the ultimate crowning. The moment when the baby's head starts to emerge from the birth canal is the moment when sort of the idea of gross out humor as like body stuff that is confronted with candor and courage becomes a test for all the characters, right? Allison says, I want to see it. And they hold up a mirror for her. And then she doesn't want her partner, Seth Rogen, to see it, but he peeks over also and sees it. And each of them has a different reaction. And then one of his friends from the waiting room rushes in and wants to help, but immediately is confronted with the vision of the crowning and then runs away. So that's the moment when pregnancy kind of finally really enters the frame of gross out comedy the film's been playing with.
And so, you know, the whole premise of the film is about an unexpected pregnancy from a one-night stand and the decision to become a couple and to carry on and have the child and become a family. There's a lot of classism in the way that that story is told. And, the successful career woman having her life derailed and the clumsy, goofy guy who has refused to grow up has to now, you know, put on his big boy pants and deal with life. But still how many people live life like that?
I don't know.
I mean, it seems very, very privileged and classy, classist depiction of life change.
A lot of pregnancy comedy is really sort of divorced from the material realities of American healthcare and childbearing, for sure, in lots of different ways. And Knocked Up was really criticized at the time of its release because the Allison character, you know, her socioeconomic status and her career ambitions and her lack of kind of religious commitments all suggest the profile of someone who potentially would have an abortion. And the relationship between her and the Ben character, played by Seth Rogen, is a bumpy one, right? So the way that the film sort of pushes a narrative where she improbably decides to carry the pregnancy to term, and then she improbably decides to stay with this Ben character, and she improbably, you know, is sort of moving through her career in ways that work with this, all really kind of decenter the real concerns of people dealing with unexpected pregnancies in favor of a romantic comedy structure that I think was widely regarded as very forced in this film. And that's one of the really interesting conversations around it, I think, that American, op-ed pages and people at the water cooler had at around the time of its release.
And so, but it wasn't the last, the thing about we have society. It informs young girls that reaching motherhood, it should be the culmination of life. That's, I'm sorry, that's our society does that. And, and then when we have these depictions of it in film and comedy and TV, I mean, is it a morality play in many ways that plays against that basic assumption of who you are and what your role should be?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that idea, that kind of sentimental norm we have around pregnancy and motherhood, is also one of the reasons that comedy struggles to present pregnancy in new kinds of ways, because the moralizing frame tends to want to reappear, and that sort of moral seriousness tends to be incompatible with the spirit of rebellion that you want in a good comedy.
Right, but at the end, the question is it funny? Did we laugh? Did we have a good time?
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are messages being imparted to us, and we have to, as you do in your book, it's all in the delivery, probing for saying, well, what's really going on here? Why are we laughing at this? And are we laughing at ourselves, or at a lot of the hypocrisy that we have in our society when it comes to this important situation? So we're going to continue our conversation. Our phone lines are open. What comedy films, television programs about pregnancy and having babies impacted you? What are your favorite ones? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. How pregnancies are depicted in TV, film, comedies tells us a lot about what our expectations are for this important, pathway in life. But they don't always trace the path of real life. They show frequently classism, stereotypes, and racism as well. There's not a lot of equity in the way that these things are depicted. We read about that in the new book. It's All in the Delivery, Pregnancy in American Film and Television Comedy. And we're joined by the author, Victoria Stewart-Tevant. And she is an associate professor of film and media studies at the University of Oklahoma. And other books she's written is A Great Big Girl Like Me, the films of Marie Dressler, and also the co-editor of Hysterical Women in American Comedy. I'm going to play another clip. This is from The Office. Pam and Jim, which was the main couple throughout the series, they have a baby, and this is what happened in The Office.
Here we go.
Good luck.
We're going to have a baby.
I got it, everybody.
5 minutes.
Jim, we waited too long.
I know.
We waited too long. 2 minutes doesn't do us any good. Well, what happened to 4 and 3
minutes? We're okay, Jim. Okay, Pamela. You know what time it is?
I don't want to have my baby here.
You're not going to. You know where you're going.
The hospital.
Yes, you are. And you know what you're going to have?
A baby.
Yes. We're going to the hospital. We're going to have a baby.
I got it. Everybody, it's go time. Action station. Stanley, man, the phones. Meredith, please. Got a bottle of water. Aaron, call an ambulance, please.
No. Ambulances are emergencies only. You call the ambulance, I call the cops.
All right, we're driving ourselves,
no,
actually.
No, Jim, you are in no condition to drive. I will drive you. Check. Got it.
All right, I have my wallet.
Yes.
Go bags in the car.
Go bag. Where's
keys.
My go bag? Where's my go bag?
I need my keys.
There's nothing in it.
You are telling me now that there is nothing in it. Okay, great. Oh, hey. Should I bring a dictionary to the hospital?
The hospital will provide dictionaries. Bring a thesaurus.
Has anyone checked how dilated she is? This is ridiculous.
Dwight, get away.
No. Dwight, let Jim do that, please. Okay.
I didn't know we had a tape measure.
We don't.
Okay, I can't find my keys. I cannot find my keys. Found them. Here we go.
Here we go.
Good luck.
Good luck, Pam.
Bye.
Thank you.
Victoria, why is that funny?
Well, it's so delightful because it brings out the most extreme qualities of every character. You know, the control freaks get more control freaking, and the anxious people get more anxious. And it all has this incredible energy about it because of the urgency of the labor situation. But I also think it's a really good example of kind of masculine appropriation of pregnancy in the pregnancy comedy. The moment when the woman has to be transported to the hospital is always like a climax of every pregnancy comedy. And it's a time for usually male heroism, right? The woman becomes a kind of passive package. And you see the same gags over and over again, right? The father pulls away in the car and doesn't realize the woman isn't in the car yet, or has a go bag stashed somewhere weird, almost hits a pedestrian on the way to the hospital. And so we see kind of all of that here, but a little bit different because it's an office situation. And so
the office is the surrogate family, or if not the family, for a lot of these people.
Yeah, that found family, but also that awkward way that something incredibly human and biological is being integrated into this, you know, bureaucratic space where it doesn't, that's not built for it. And so everything's an imposition and everything takes on an extra awkwardness. I love the office for this too, because in this scene, the reason that Pam doesn't go to the hospital earlier is she and Jim are holding out because their insurance only covers 48 hours or something in the hospital. And so they're trying to wait till after midnight so that they can get their full hospital time. So it's also, I mean, in addition to the ways that it's mocking the bureaucracy of the office itself, it's really, I think, a brilliant commentary on the kind of anti-humanism of the American insurance industry and how it regulates the ways that bodies are treated within the medical system of reproduction.
Now, in the series Maud, which was a Norman Lear series spinoff for All in the Family, Bea Arthur, who plays Maud, she finds out late in life that she is pregnant, and she decides that she does not want to have this child. Is just not something that would, it doesn't make sense for her in that stage of life. And so she decides to have an abortion. And I'm going to play a clip of that conversation that they had.
There is no earthly reason for you to go through with this at your age. You know it. I know it. Walter knows it.
I don't want you to talk of just don't talk about it.
I didn't say anything, but now that you mentioned it, it's legal in New York now, isn't it?
Oh, of course it is, Walter. Mother, I don't understand your hesitancy. When they made it a law, you were for it.
Of course, I wasn't pregnant then.
Mother, it's ridiculous. My saying this to you, we're free. We finally have the right to decide what we can do with our own bodies.
All right, then will you please get yours into the kitchen?
You're just scared.
I am not scared.
You are, and it's as simple as going to the dentist.
Now I'm scared.
Mother, listen to me. It's a simple operation now. But when you were growing up, it was illegal. And it was dangerous, and it was sinister, and you've never gotten over that. Now you tell me that's not true.
It's not true. And you're right. I've never gotten over it.
It's not your fault. When you were young, abortion was a dirty word. It's not anymore. Now you think about that.
That was 1972, before the Roe decision from the Supreme Court. Do you think they could have that kind of dialogue on broadcast television today?
Well, we hardly have such a thing as broadcast television today. So much of the media environment is fragmented, right? And audiences sort of choose their own comfort level with candor around issues like these. There's some really good abortion comedies that have come out in the last 10 years that are having, I think, conversations like this, but you know, they may not have hit the kind of awareness of things that Maud would have had, right? It had a 41% or something share of the audience the first time that this episode was broadcast. And that's just many millions more people than a similar show these days would reach.
But I mean, there still is broadcast television, the big three, the big networks that are over the air, and they still have to kind of tamp things down and leave that kind of content to you know, the specialty streamers.
Right. Yeah.
So it does seem like this is something that would be even too hot for broadcast today.
Yeah.
You know, but and was this, I'm sure it was controversial at the time.
You know, it's like the controversy sort of materialized after it aired. Norman Lear, when he wrote the episode, at first the studio did, or the network did say no, but he had so much power within the industry that just by refusing to write a replacement episode, they folded relatively quickly. And the show aired, and it was a kind of slow building controversy because Roe v. Wade passed in the time between the initial airing of this episode and like summer reruns. And by the time summer reruns came around and Roe v. Wade had, the decision had been handed down, then activists had started to really circle the wagons. And Maud was the first show that they targeted with their new strategy of asking advertisers to pull their support from media that dealt positively with safe and legal abortion. So that worked. A lot of advertisers did pull their support, and the show was pulled from summer reruns because affiliates wouldn't air it without commercials. So it had a really interesting kind of position, really straddling the idea that there is television too hot to handle and abortion is the third rail issue in popular media.
Well, there were more abortion plot lines on television in 2024 than compared to last year, 66 across 63 shows compared to 49. That's according to the annual Abortion on Screen report released this week by Advancing New Standards in Reproductive Health. So they're saying that, you know, abortion is being talked about more in these programs and all these, you know, we have these, you know, different stratified streaming type programs. Yeah. But they're still saying that they get a lot wrong in how they portray abortion in these programs because the majority of the characters, just for the first time, 51% of the people getting the abortion are people of color, women of color. And that's for the first time that's happened. And that's been seen as some of the flaws in how this has been portrayed. A lot of these plot lines are in shows like Chicago Med, Married to Medicine, and Girls on the Bus. So are we getting better at it?
I think there was a new attention to this around 2015. The Shout Your Abortion movement, which was a social media kind of hashtag that started around that time, was very much about kind of asking ordinary women to, you know, just tell stories of their own abortions in order to counter the myths and also the sort of idea of secrecy, which is inherently stigmatizing, right? And to make abortion stories more normal and to help people understand that the outcome of abortion stories is not necessarily tragedy and death, which is how popular media had most often framed abortion, but actually can be, well, the number one emotional experience reported by people following abortions is relief, right? That it's an exercise in bodily autonomy that enables, you know, a person to move on with their life under conditions that they've chosen in most cases. So the idea of Shout Your Abortion, I think, also really influenced creators who recognized that they had big platforms.
Right, and the news.
Do that on scale.
The fall of Roe with Dobbs. Creating, you know, in all this drama that created, and that's great fodder, fertile ground, as you might say, for storytelling. Let's take a break, and we'll come right back. Our phone lines are open if you want to jump into conversation. I'd love to have you. 833-877-8255. This is The Source in Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line is Victoria Stuart-Tevelt, and she is Stuart-Tevant, and her book is It's All in the Delivery, examining how pregnancy has been portrayed in comedies and TV and in film. And you can call in. The number is 833-877-8255. And let's go to Sharon. And Sharon, you're on the air.
I just want to say that one of the funniest comedy skits I saw on TV about pregnancy and imminent delivery was the Dick Van Dyke Show. Yeah. Of course, they slept in twin beds, separate twin beds at the time. But his to-go bag to get her to the hospital, and how he rehearsed and how befuddled he became when she actually was ready to deliver, it was very funny.
All right. Well, yes, it was. Sharon, thank you for that. And that's another one of a classic comedy portraying pregnancy in flashbacks. But also, there was the bit about how they were convinced that they had brought the wrong baby home. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yeah, I do.
And that apparently is the longest laugh ever in television history, because when they tracked down the family that they thought they had gotten the wrong baby from, they show up at the house and they're African American, and then it's hilarious, you know. But uh-huh. I thought it was classically great. So yeah,
that flashback episode where they narrate the pregnancy is wonderful in every way, and you can tell that Dick Van Dyke was a dancer, right? Because he, you know, sort of leaps out of bed. he's rehearsing, you know, where to put his hat so that he can get it on fast. And as I said, there's a lot of cliches around the father, you know, panicking but being ready for the moment of delivery, because that's his big moment, right? He's a little bit passive through most of the pregnancy, but he's got one big important job. And I agree, that is the best of the lot.
So is there something that really nails the mother's experience? You know, is it just too close to the bone for laughs?
No, I don't think it's too close to the bone for laughs. You know, I think a lot of the big breakthroughs over the years have come when the camera, when the text is willing to think a little bit more about the mother's experience. So one was I Love Lucy, where Ricky's really funny, but Lucy's also really funny. And for the first time, the pregnant woman is actually like in on the play and in on the joke. And she uses her belly, you know, to have silly costumes. She has like a big hoop skirt in one episode, and she dresses like a man, and it's like a beer belly in another episode. And she's actually like having fun with the pregnancy in a way you wouldn't see before. And one is Maude, and one is Murphy Brown, where there was, you know, this huge breakthrough in terms of representations of unmarried
pregnancy. Single motherhood.
Yeah, single motherhood. And then just recently, there's a film called Babes with Alana Glazer and Michelle Buteau. It was directed by Pamela Adlon. And it's available on Hulu right now.
I tried to pull a clip, but it's just too obscene, too profane. So couldn't do it.
It is profane.
So, but I did pull a clip here. And this is from Ali Wong and her stand-up called Baby Cobra. And I think there's a lot here. Let's give a listen.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys can tell, but I am 7.5 months pregnant. Yeah. It's very rare and unusual to see a female comic perform pregnant because female comics don't get pregnant. Just try to think of one. I dare you. There's none of them. Once they do get pregnant, they generally disappear. That's not the case with male comics. Once they have a baby, they'll get up on stage a week afterwards and they'll be like, guys, I just had this baby. It's so annoying and boring. And all these other dads in the audience are like, that's hilarious. I identify. And their fame just swells.
So tell me about this stand-up routine and why it's important.
You know, she's not exactly right that there are no pregnant predecessors who did stand-up comedy while pregnant. There was Joan Rivers did continue to do stand-up when she was pregnant in the 60s. And Sandra Bernhardt did a routine. There's a couple of sort of small examples here and there, but she definitely is correct that sort of the big 1 hour special, 7 months pregnant, striding around the stage with a big belly is really quite unique. And it's a moment not only kind of where culturally we need to see the pregnant person speaking for herself, but it's also a result of changes in labor conditions within comedy, right? Like for years, if you want to be a stand-up, you had to travel the country and stay in these, you know, little beat-up condos with other comics who were traveling the same circuit, and you had to perform in smoky bars, and just the health conditions of it, the labor conditions, the hours were incredibly not conducive to having a pregnancy. And so it's the work of many, especially women, over many years to improve those labor conditions that even enabled this sort of generation. And Wong's performance was the first of what became several. Amy Schumer's terrific stand-up special Growing was recorded when she was in her third trimester. Jenna Friedman did a show called Lady Killer that's terrific. And the combination of the sort of the pregnant body that was taboo for so long, but now I think is a kind of fetish where people see it but don't really see it. It's commodified and exoticized and rendered a kind of fashion statement instead of a really complicated and often clumsy bodily process.
Well, one of the problems with, you know, you see this in some comedies about how there's this loss of bodily autonomy for the pregnant woman, that everyone feels like they have some say in how she is able to conduct herself, and they're able to touch her and do things to her that they wouldn't be able to if she wasn't pregnant. And, you know, I find that interesting.
Yeah, that when you're pregnant, I mean, it's very visible after the first trimester. It's a visible condition, and it does tend to change your whole sort of social relationships, right? I mean, just simple things like people holding the door for you or giving you their seat on the bus. But also, there's this constant surveillance. You know, people judge if you're drinking coffee or, you know, running or just living your life because there is such a strict set of kind of rules for the correct way to do pregnancy, the correct age, the correct marital status, the correct life choices, the correct socioeconomic status.
But still the loss of the individualism.
Yeah. Yeah, this sense that other people own you because they have some kind of like claim to the well-being of the future potential child.
So I've noticed this new genre of the since the fall of Roe, the abortion road movie, where maybe somebody has to travel out of a red state to get to a blue state, and the hijinks along the way. And I've seen several trailers for these types of films, and it seems to be something that people want to explore, a story that they want to tell.
Yeah, there are a couple of dramas that are like that. And then in the space of comedy, there are three, and they're all really good. I would recommend them. There's a film called Grandma with Lily Tomlin playing a grandmother, and Julia Garner is the granddaughter who needs an abortion. And they don't ever leave Los Angeles, but they're both broke. So they're rushing around trying to find $600 by 5 o'clock when her appointment is. And so it's also very much about like barriers to reproductive access, and is using the kind of structure, the skeleton of the road comedy to add intensity to that. So it's not just a lecture on reproductive access, but it's an adventure where women are trying to kind of make something happen. And the other two are called Unpregnant and Plan B. And Plan B, they're not looking for an abortion. They're just looking for like the morning after pill. But obviously there's a ticking clock on that as well. And those girls are in South Dakota, and the local Planned Parenthood has been shut down. And so it's a way of dramatizing the very real barriers to reproductive access, especially for minors in kind of middle America, especially without preaching, but by making it into a grand adventure that still has that satiric edge.
So there is this, and if you watch, you know, these TV sitcoms, and then when they have the baby, that's basically the end of the sitcom, you know?
Right.
And so I think about Mad About You, which was a successful sitcom for years. And then when they had the baby, it became really not funny anymore, and it went away. And you see it happen a lot in some of these shows, or you never see the children ever. They're just kind of always in another room. I mean, does that reflect an attitude of like, once you have your child, that your life's no longer fun? It's no longer funny.
I think maybe. Or at least life changes so much that whatever is the initial premise of the show or the joke or the relationship can't always survive the transition. So if it's a family comedy, the babies are already there. If it's a romantic comedy, the baby's not there. And the transition from one to the other doesn't always work for all audiences. I find that incredibly frustrating, too, because a lot of these romantic comedies about unplanned pregnancies have to end with this kind of happy ending, like Knocked Up. And the idea that, oh, OK, they had the baby, it's very exciting, now everything's going to be fine, leaves out, you know,
all of the challenges, all the reality.
They haven't even gotten started yet, on what's the challenging part of this incredibly unstable premise. And that the, especially in films, I think, the narrative of pregnancy maps so easily into like a three-act structure, right? Act one is learning you're pregnant. Act two is going for the ultrasound, all the middle stuff. And then act three is the birth, and it's a perfect climax, right? We rush to the hospital and scream for drugs. All of the comedy kind of convenes in the same space.
Right. So we still have to hold these comedies accountable, making sure that we have fair representation for class and for race, which seems to still, there's still some ground to be broken. The book is, it's all in the delivery. Victoria Stewart Vann, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It's been a real pleasure.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.